This is Jeff Chrisman, and I'm on the Living Arts of Tulsa podcast, and today I'm visiting with artist Jave Yoshimoto. Thanks so much for taking the time today, Jave. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I like the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Certainly. I thought what we might do for the benefit of listeners and viewers that might not be familiar with your work, and of course I have read about you, but certainly am very excited to hear more about your work and how it's evolved over time. I thought what I might do is just ask you just to share a little bit, if someone were to ask you about your work and had not seen it before, maybe just hearing from your perspective about that.
Sure thing. So long story short, I'm a generation Asian American, U.S. citizen, and a lot of my travels, being a first generation, having moved to different parts of the country, I became very interested in the humanitarian issues about kindness, about being there for other people, and just witnessing people's stories. So over the years, it kind of shifted from an outsider observing the American culture to really catching the disaster that happens throughout the world, and to be in transition all the time, to today where it's more about having sympathy or empathy for people who are struggling through everyday life to this day. So yeah, you'll see a lot of different themes throughout my work, some of the pieces I can show you. But yeah, at the very core is I want to really capture these humanitarian issues, what it means to be a person, what it means to be alive, and what it means to be, you know, a witness to other people's journeys, really.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'd read a little something that I was going to ask you about as well. I just was going to make sure that I understood this. This is the first time I've seen the term social amnesia, and I found it very interesting that your art and that your work, if I'm understanding based on my reading of this, that is really speaking about or speaking to the, you know, the news cycle as we have, you know, there's one calamity after another. And it seems as though, if I'm understanding correctly, that they're, you know, that you are speaking to the fact that it's, you know, there's something that happens, a disaster or a calamity, and then suddenly within just a short period of time, the public is suddenly focused on something else without fully processing, you know, what exactly has happened. So I thought it would be interesting to hear from you more about that.
Sure. I mean, you basically pretty much knocked it out of the park right there. But if we were to use 2020 as an example, I mean, we already have forgotten about the Australian fire, or how great and big and, you know, that was. And now we're faced with this worldwide pandemic. And, you know, now we're talking about this Asian murderous hornets or something like that, right, this month?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there's just so many different things happening on the daily news cycle that we just kind of forget about what happened yesterday. You know, I think just a couple of days ago, we were outraged about that the African American jogger who was gunned down by two men. But it just takes another new, fresh news to help us forget about that. So it's a constant, massive information that's coming to our screens, our phones, our computers, our television. We forget because we can only take in so much information. So with my art, I try to, you know, capture these snapshots of important moments in our history and to say, hey, let's not skip over this. Let's remember this. This is something important that happened here. Let's talk about this. So that's the way I kind of process my art composition, art making.
Yeah, and I find that so interesting. And I was going to ask, just from your own personal experience, you know, as you're choosing something, it would be very interesting to hear, you know, when you choose a particular subject to deal with through your art, and then also maybe hearing a little bit about what it's like for you personally, in as much as you'd want to share, as far as is does that help, you know, how that helps you, or if it helps you process your own feelings about these things that have happened.
Sure. So I'll talk about my largest paid, which was this large 30-foot-long painting on paper, which was gouache on paper, about the Japanese earthquake and tsunami in 2011. I think that moment when I read the news, it was extremely traumatic for me, because here was somebody that was, Here was somebody that was, you know, born in Japan, grew up in Japan, but I'd never been to the area where the earthquake struck. And I lived in the U.S. for more than 20 years at this point, and I was so shaken to the core about what had happened to all these people. 200,000 people are still missing to this day and homeless and whatnot. So it's just something that really, that feeling that I got, and that feeling was really what motivated me to make art. So anytime I think of, that's where it comes from. I personally respond with the feeling, and then using that as like a fuel to start making composition about it, to start thinking about, oh, okay, how do I want to talk about this particular topic where people can listen or hear? Because in today's society, it's so politically divided, right? So if I say one wrong thing, it's just going to fire up this other group to really get angry at the rest. And there was no conversation that can be had if people are angry at each other. So it's kind of a careful treading of like, okay, how do I make an objective observation of what's happening? And can I use my art as a tool to bring that to the table for kind of communication? So.
I was going to say that I think that the ability for this to spur conversations, I'm kind of curious too, just not to put you on the spot, but in terms of, have there been any of the most memorable conversations that you've had about that, though, you know, that particular work or any other of your recent work, just things that have been enlightening for you?
Yeah, I think that when I had my show Living Arts many years, people saw my scroll for the first time. One man in particular walked up to me and said, I like that your work is making me think. I don't like what it's making me I like what it's making me think of, but I like the fact that you're getting me to think about it. So that was like a good way to talk about work, right? I mean, again, here's a person who did not necessarily agree with what I had to present, or doesn't necessarily like the fact that I had to present this, you know, traumatic event. But at the same time, like, you know, impact, right? Because I think with that kind of impact, I'll get him to remember about my work, you know, many years from now. Maybe he'll actually talk about it when he's ready. So, you know, that's the thing. It's like a seed of an idea that I want to plant in people's minds. And hopefully that's enough to not just see as art as a decor, but as that tool to communicate, to want to talk about this particular topic with other people, be it artists or not. So, you know, I'm trying to think in a bigger picture where, you know, again, my work is just a tool, and it's not so much about the aesthetics, whether or not it's finished or whatever. I mean, it is finished for me, but so it's about the greater purpose of what art can do as opposed to just like a decor on the wall.
Yeah, and I love that whole idea about, you know, that it spurs on people to think, even maybe if they don't necessarily like what they're thinking. I have to wonder too if that's part of, you know, the overall healing process. And that's what I was going to ask you too. I wonder sometimes if it seems like and I can't speak for everybody, but it seems like with the news cycle there is, I don't know if it's something new every day, but it feels like that a lot of the time, that I wonder if it's become easier for people to become desensitized to these things, that it just, you know, that it just becomes, this is the news of the day. And then, you know, that before you know it, it's kind of like it's floating down the river, and then there's something new that's come right behind it.
Right. And, you know, these news cycle can be very traumatic because it could be such a heavy topic, right? So to take on the topic, to kind of think about it, talk about it, and then yell at other people on social media about it is really exhausting. So, you know, I can understand why people would just be like, okay, I'm going to thread or post and not talk about it. Like, oh, here's a cat picture. I'm going to enjoy this cat picture for now, kind of thing, right? So I think, it's like the world of extremes now, right? Like, we have all these serious topics now. How do we each individually cope? For me, it's make art about it, or, you know, or maybe pick at a Catholic, just because that's something I do anyway. But so it's just became a coping mechanism for our present day culture, and we'll have to find our way to deal with it. You know, visual art is just one way. I'm a creator, so that's something I like to do. Hopefully people can see value in that, you know, not just in the object of creation, but the act of creating too.
Oh yeah. And then I'm wondering, as you're creating a work, does that tend to kind of slow things down for you? In other words, do you find that it gives you a little more of some room or headspace to be able to, as you're creating that, the work to kind of, to process, you know, how you feel about a certain event or the event that you're dealing with in your work?
Yeah, it's sort of cathartic, right? I mean, it's the word catharsis, and people like to, you know, break things or whatever. But for me, it becomes this gateway to a place of meditation, to really think and sit through with this feeling and thoughts, and where I can like really break down how I'm feeling about this. You know, sometimes it comes out in words format, or sometimes it comes out in visual arts format, and whichever the case may be, it helps me really think about this topic. Do I care enough to proceed and keep going with it? Or, you know, do I stop and then try to talk about this topic in another way? I mean, it just really depends. Or do I just, you know, my friends about, hey, how do I feel about this? How do you feel about this kind of thing? You know, so yeah.
Yeah, just I think that's so healing. And then I wonder too, is there kind of a line between, for instance, if you're creating something that is spurring people to think, but maybe in some cases they are, you know, not necessarily liking what they're, you know, what they are thinking about as a result of that. I guess I wonder is there kind of a fine line between getting people's attention and reaching out? In other words, and it seems to me that it's certainly an act of bravery to be willing to actually confront these difficult subjects, and at the same time to also put it out there into the public sphere where people have the ability to react, you know, how they want to.
Yeah, I mean, every artwork is open to interpretation, right? And no two people are going to read the artwork the exact same way, and you know, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with how the way they react is the way they're going to react. And I think for any creative person, the death of an artwork or any creative object is if you get no reaction at all. To find out that the audience member, whoever it may be, artist or not, that they have that type of emotional engagement to want to discuss it, talk about it, and discuss it angry, who knows, or enjoy it. Any kind of reaction is better than nothing. So I know that I did my job if I got some kind of a emotional reaction, response, and their attention, I suppose. I think there's like a rule I learned in college many years ago about the 5-second rule, where if you can get their attention for 5 seconds, you did your job. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Absolutely. Have there been any specific works that you've done where maybe at the end of the process, are there any of these where you have maybe found yourself feeling a little differently or thinking a little differently, as when you get to the end of the process?
Not necessarily. I kind of start with like a semi-ambiguous idea of how the project should go. And I have a general idea of where I'm going to be placing things as far as compositionally, but it does change over time, just slightly. It's really placing the jigsaw puzzles in where I want them to be type of situation. But the general feeling from where I start to finish remains just about the same. So, I think that, you know, if anything, it helps me release that feeling that I started with and just to really let go towards the end.
Oh, yeah. And I'm wondering, too, maybe being able to look back at some of your previous works. Uh-huh. I wonder in some ways if that has been beneficial in some way for you. In other words, when you look back and see some of the things that have occurred, to be able to realize that you've created something that allows people to reflect on it and to maybe take a little bit of time out of their day or out of their life to reflect on these things, you know, that have happened in the past.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to show you a piece of work to talk about exactly about that.
Thank you.
Let me just share screen with you. So I made a piece about the Las Vegas shooting from 2017. And I don't know if you're able to see it or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's coming across. Yes.
Yeah. So with the piece, what happened was that I had personal connection to Las Vegas because I've been there many times over the years since I was a child to my more recent adult. And it's not just about being downtown and all the glitzy escapism that Las Vegas is typically known for, but I also enjoyed the city itself, the people itself. So when I heard about the news, it was extremely traumatic for me too. But it's also a tough subject for a lot of locals too. I'm like, who is this outsider guy making an art about our most traumatic memory of the city, right? So I recently showed this piece and Las Vegas at College of Southern Nevada. And the reaction was something I was trying to brace myself for, because I could understand if people were angry with me for making peace about that tragedy. But again, it's also made this piece from a place where I wanted to honor and respect the people who have suffered through this. And again, use this moment as like a place where this is an important moment in history. I want to remember it. This should be talked about and to be continued about. So I think the discussion area is more important than anything else. And luckily, most of the people I spoke with had no problem with this piece. There's been you know, a couple of years since that moment. So people have had time to process this feeling. I think if I had made this and released this like a month after the shooting, then it would have been a really difficult place for people to really engage. But when I did present it back in, I think, February this year, people were very receptive. And so I really enjoyed that ability to engage, to use the work to talk about the idea of healing and moving on. So, yeah. So anyway. I hope that answered that question.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I wonder if in some ways, maybe, you know, the idea of being able to look back at something that happened a couple of years ago, that in some way remembering, I wonder if that's also what part of the healing process is. And I'm just kind of wondering this out loud with you in the moment, you know, that,
yeah.
And I was trying to kind of pay attention as I was listening to you talk about my own, I was trying to like listen to my own internal reactions. And I do remember that, you know, that at that time, I remember being very bewildered about just the scope of how so many people were affected directly by that event, in terms of people that were out in the street and with the gunfire and everything that was going on. But I wonder sometimes if maybe we can actually, looking back like this, does also help us to heal and remember.
Yeah.
You know, what happened. I also wonder too, do you think in some ways, is part of this focus to maybe help us, people as a society, to maybe think about how we can prevent things like this in the future? I'm just kind of shot, you know, as far as
that's tough to that's a tough call. I mean, I don't know if it can or if it will, but if we can spark the conversation, maybe talk about preventing, then that'll be great. I mean, I don't know the greater impact or if it'll even have any impact. I mean, it's always a risk when I'm making work, and hopefully I don't upset somebody. But if I do it again, it's about that way to connect and talk about things, right? And I think the problem with that Vegas piece was that, again, I'm an outsider coming into Vegas and making a display. It was like, hey, this is my experience about your guys' situation. So that's where it can be seen as being insensitive, but which I wasn't trying to be. So I'm going to show you another piece to talk about something similar of a topic. Just give me 1 second. Whoops. I guess I need to open that up first. This is going to be another recent piece that I made. And so this is about the Syrian refugee crisis. And so I have much more of a connection here because I actually went overseas to volunteer with the refugee crisis, I went there went to Greece with my wife to help with the humanitarian crowd. And we were basically helping people off the boats, providing shelter and food and so on. So I got to meet people in person and hear their stories, and then really was able to empathize and then connect with people. So I didn't do that with the Vegas piece. So that's where the biggest difference is. Because in this case, I was much more personally connected, and I was much more personally invested. I actually was there for longer periods of time to do research and to really hear people out. So I think the intention obviously is very important when it comes to topics like this, but the execution and just being generally sensitive about this is just a very important factor when it comes to connecting with the people making art about, or in the greater, bigger picture of the bigger society and communities. So, yeah.
And in terms of, as far as showing that coming up as a call to either answer or ignore, I'm wondering too, maybe the significance of that, since that really got my attention.
Yeah, sorry, I'll go back to the screen. One of the most interesting thing about the cell phone situation is that when we brought the people on land, got into Lesbos, we had multiple tents set up, right? And one of the tents that was set up was a charging station for cell phones so that people can call their families and then feel like, okay, I'm still okay, or they're still okay, kind of thing, checking in and whatnot. But what was interesting about my time there is that all the volunteers were from all around the world. They answered a call to come help to the total strangers from halfway across the world. They owed them nothing. They basically stopped their employment, sacrificed their time, energy, effort to help people, total strangers, who just out of the kindness of their own heart. So I think that's what it means to really answer a call for help. But we also, people also do ignore the call. So this is more like a way to challenge my audience members. Here are some refugees looking directly at you. They're asking you for help. Do you help or do you not? So just another level of engagement.
So. Yeah, I was going to say just the immediacy of that. In other words, just kind of, you know, seeing the perspective of these people looking at me, and then really, you know, then thinking about, okay, well, you know, what do I do? Do I take that call or do I ignore it? And really, the immediacy of that, of what I'm seeing in those people, really does speak to me right now, even.
Yeah. Next. And what's interesting about the bottom part, the orange red trickles of blood is made out of the actual refugee life jackets that they were wearing. I brought a few pieces back, and I basically cut the fabric and installed as part of the piece to kind of talk about, you know, having an actual object to kind of connect the audience to the refugees, I guess, not just like an imagery of that I painted or drew. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that. And
yeah, no
problem. You know, if you had any other work that you were wanting to share as well?
Sure, yeah, 1 second. I'm going to show you some of my earlier woodblock pieces here. So I don't know if you can see this or not, but
oh yeah,
this is one of my, probably my largest laser cut relief sculptures. So I basically designed these digitally. They were originally I redrew with through my computer, so I can cut out different layers on the wood and then basically assemble and glue them together to finish this build. But this is based on local mythology in Greece, the Greek goddess Eos, who is the goddess of dawn. There's also the local story of how there's the Virgin Mary, who is part mermaid, who helps sailors cross the sea to safety with a boat in one arm and a trident in the other. So I basically reimagined that Virgin Mermaid as like a contemporary version, with the woman being a refugee woman helping other refugees to safety, kind of thing. So just reimagining old iconic thing to more contemporary icons, like say the Twitter birds on the corners, or just the modern subject matter with all the refugees coming on land asking for help. So yeah, just a lot of different considerations in building or, you know, compositions like this. And when I started, I didn't mean to paint any of them. I just wanted them to be physical objects rather than paintings on paper I used to do before. So now it's like a whole entire different level of art making for me personally, because I never made 3D works before this. So yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much. And that leads me to my next question. I was going to ask you just a little bit about how you got started creating art, and then maybe to hear a little bit about how your work has evolved over the long term, getting some sense of that.
Sure. I guess for me, I started drawing when I was 3 years old, but the main purpose as a young artist back then to about when I was a teenager is that it was more a means of escapism because I was going through a lot of struggles with my own family situation. So drawing something was a means for me to escape from the pains I was experiencing. Where after I went to college, I became more socially aware of the things that's happening around me. So my observation of the external world became my inspiration, and because I understood pain for myself, I kind of was able to take on other people's pains to use as an inspiration to make my works as well. I was trained a painter, and I went to school in UC Santa Barbara for my undergrad. Then I went to the School of the Art Institute of Chicago for my first master's in art therapy, where I got to use or learn a lot more about the process of art making and how that kind of healing effects and a way to really connect and witness other people's journeys as well. To getting my master's in painting at Syracuse University. So it's a lot of a transitional journey, I suppose, which helped me become a better artist, I think, in the long run to today. But yeah, it's really just a lot of evolving and growing as a person. And I think the more I grow as a person, the better artist I become, regardless of, you know, my skills. It's more about the fact that I have to have that mental energy and mental focus in my head to become the artist I needed to be.
Oh, yeah. Then I was going to ask as well, as far as maybe, was there a certain point at which you made a decision to start creating art with this kind of focus? I didn't know if there was anything to that as far as maybe any point in your journey that you made this decision or anything that led to that.
Yeah, it was again the scroll painting that I talked about earlier, where the subject matter was more about the world and not about me personally. And because I thought, I was making works about some of my own experiences as well, but then they became too self-indulgent in a way, and I wanted to understand beyond myself. So I think that's when the shift started to happen, because that's when I started taking on some of the other happenings and some of the other people's traumas, I guess, around the world. So that became my main motivation to really want to go on a journey, explore and find out other people's human tales. And I want to capture their humanity into my works.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I definitely honor that very much. I was going to ask you as well, I wonder if in some ways, being able to really engage with this, you know, in the way that you are, where you're deeply, you know, dealing with this versus just seeing something, a sound bite on, you know, on television or on the radio, I really have to wonder if in some ways, really what a difference this makes as far as, getting people to be, or yourself to be able to really deeply engage with this and spend time with it, so to speak, you know, with these tragedies.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody has a different way of trying to understand the world, right? I mean, some people like to come up with conspiracy theories because it's an easy way for them to understand things, to kind of make up a story that's digestible, because they don't want, I think when people have too much information, it's a lot to process and they don't want their own personal beliefs and truths to be, to crumble apart. So I think everybody has their own truth that they want to follow. And I'm not trying to shatter anybody's, belief system or anything like that. For me, my art is my truth. It's from my subjective experience, and this is how I want to share. What people do in their own perspective from looking at my work is really up to them, but I hope I connect to them in some human level way.
Yeah, and I was going to say too that the whole idea here, what's really speaking to me very loudly and I thank you so much for sharing these works, sure, is that I read the other day, there was a quote, I can't remember who said it. I believe it was a Zen master, and he had spoken about how, you know, whatever we give attention to, ultimately that's what makes it sacred or holy. And yeah. So I was wondering maybe if that resonates at all in terms of where we, you know, sometimes we don't, what we pay attention to, maybe we don't like the way it feels, but yet it's part of the human experience that sometimes it can't all be happy subjects.
I mean, I'll just show you something that kind of talked beyond that point. So this is about the our border immigration crisis, how we basically detain children from other countries on our, you know, Texas internment camps, basically. So instead of stars on the flag, you see the camps where the kids are detained. The SOS guards, behind the bars and so on. So, yeah, we kind of take away their humanity so we can feel comfortable in our own little world, bubble world. So, point, I just feel like this isn't an easy subject to talk about. I feel that, you know, it's easy for maybe minority Americans to talk about subjects like this, but some people who might be in the rural America who are comfortable with their own life, I would prefer not to see this or not to talk about it. They might just say this, they are outsiders, they do not belong here. But for me, at the core, like, well, what kind of people are we? So again, questioning our own humanities and valuing other people's humanities as well.
Yeah, and I was going to say the deep questions that this has the potential to spur within people, I think is just so powerful. I guess I'm even seeing just in my own experience that this can sometimes just, you know, this is something that can really change us as human beings. You know, the way that, you know, the way that we pay attention to things and the way that we process these things and actually sit with them, you know, so to speak, when it is not always a happy subject or something that makes us feel comfortable.
Right. No, it isn't. Yeah, it's a challenge to, take on a subject like this, because I feel like I'm always trying to brace myself for the vitriol and some kind of lashback that I should, you know, prepare myself for. But I can't always worry about that when I make pieces like this. I want to talk about this, which is why I make pieces like this, because I think it's important for us to, again, remind ourselves of who we are as people. And if we value other people's lives, as we say we do.
Oh yeah, I feel very compelled, or it's coming up in the moment, to ask you, just in terms of your own experience as an artist and as a human being creating these works, does that expectation sometimes, or preparation, or whatever you would call it, in terms of thinking there might be some sort of a pushback, or someone may, you know, there may be a flashback of anger of some sort. Do you think that's part of the process, the artistic process, as well, as far as your, you know, being, you know, preparing for that internally?
Yeah, I mean, there's some kind of preparation for that, but it's not always. It's a part of it, but never a big part of it. And, you know, I'll worry about whatever happens when it happens. I can't be scared to make something that I want to make, which I feel is important to make. So, it's just, it is part of it, but not all of it.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I respect that so much. And I think that, you know, that's why it seems to me that art has so much power. And I guess even thinking about how in some parts of the world that, you know, the freedom to create art as one wants to is sometimes suppressed. And I'm wondering if this has to be why, in some cases, that there is a fear of what this is going to make people feel, or what people are going to think.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure other people have not made or written about something because of their fear of their own safety, and I don't blame them. I think for anybody to succeed, they have to feel like they have a safe space to make what they need to make to have an audience. And one thing I think that I learned over my years of traveling and meeting different people from around the world, there is a universal truth. People want to be heard, people want to be understood, people want to be accepted as they are. And that is true anywhere I go. I think that I try to respect that in my art as much as I can.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I really honor, you know, what you, you know, the work that you have done and the message and the potential that it has to spur people to take the time to actually pay attention to these things and work with their feelings that they have. And so I really appreciate you taking the time. It's been an honor just to hear your perspective about this. And I would certainly have to think that young artists who are, you know, in the process of finding themselves, that they can learn so much from this in terms of being, you know, being courageous enough to, as you say, to speak to these universal truths.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. But every artist has to find their own truth from their own personal experiences. I mean, if I had to give any advice to any artist, is to travel, meet a lot of different people, and then compare their lives to the lives the people they met, and then see if that inspires them to work. But yeah, I mean, again, everybody has to find the truth in their own way, in their own time. So there's no timeline on how to make it happen. Just, when they can, they should.
Definitely. Well, I was going to say, Jave, thank you so much. This has been fantastic getting to learn more about you as an artist and sure. as a human being and what your journey has been like. So thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much.